Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, what's your story? How well do you know your own story? Who are you, really? Could you write about your story? Can you do a good job writing about your story? Or would it be biased? And what would create that bias? Your ego? How honest can we be in our stories? And we're going to find out, because there's an opportunity to learn how to write our own story so that we understand it better and maybe even transform it a bit. And so there's a wonderful book called Step Out of Your Story, Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life. And it's incredible. I've read the book and I'm so excited about this opportunity to look at our story from another viewpoint, our own, but through a different glass. So I'm excited about interviewing the author of Step Out of Your Story, Kim Schneiderman. Kim, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that we can talk about this, because you've done such a wonderful job of helping your readers look at themselves in a dispassionate way, at least in a way that their ego doesn't get in the way, right? So what trick do you use for that?
Well, the trick I use is the third person narrative, which is the voice of the omniscient narrator. If you've ever read a story where there's a character who's outside the story, who's talking about the action of the narrative. So instead of writing about yourself using I or me, I ask my readers to use the third person to write of themselves as he or she. That's not just a gimmick. It's actually based on a growing body of research that shows that viewing your life through the lens of the third person can help you see yourself compassionately and objectively. It gives you a certain emotional distance from whatever you're experiencing.
It looks at our life as if it's fiction, not
yes,
real.
Yes, it does. Right. So you're fooling your ego into thinking that you're writing about somebody else, but you're actually just writing about yourself.
And it gives us compassion about this other person we're writing about, who's us, but we can look at that person and maybe get to like them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because it's so often we read books and we go to movies where we sort of understand that the person who is the star of the story is going to be facing challenges in a particular way, and that those challenges are going to expose maybe some vulnerabilities that they have or force them to stretch and grow in some way. And we have compassion for those characters, and we expect and root for that transformation. It can be so hard when we're in the midst of some kind of personal crisis or challenges to step back, to step out of our story, to really get that objective viewpoint and start rooting for ourselves and our own transformation.
And maybe from that distance we can see ourselves as a hero.
Exactly. And actually that's what some of the studies show, that actually people who, especially if they look back at some of the things that have happened in their lives in the third person, that they tend to see themselves as someone who's overcome obstacles and challenges, and are less likely to use that victim story the way you would if you were talking about myself and me.
What is a character arc?
Well, so a character arc is sort of the way a particular person evolves. You might look at it as sometimes you get the beginning of a symphony. You hear the first couple of notes and you sort of have an idea of how the symphony is going to move or in what direction it's going to move. Every story, there's a main character. And at the beginning of the story, he or she possesses a certain set of viewpoints or perspectives that are challenged by circumstances of life, because life in general is constantly presenting us with all kinds of plot twists and different kinds of opportunities to challenge the way that we look at things. So the idea is how we grow in response to all of these challenges is really our character arc. And those can be positive challenges, like getting the opportunity to write a book and be on a radio show, or it can be something more difficult, like being diagnosed with a terminal illness or going through a divorce or losing your job. All of these situations change us in some way. They present us with an opportunity to deepen ourselves, whether it's an opportunity to grow more compassionate or more resilient or more disciplined or maybe have more faith. So it's looking at ourselves as like the fact of how are we growing over the course of our story. So that's right. The character arc, how we grow over the course of our story.
It's an overview
yes.
of where we come from and who we think we are is in an overview. Because in this story that we're going to be writing about ourselves as the third person, we want to know who we're writing about. So we want to understand their character arc.
Right, and actually that's what I do at the beginning of my book, is I have people do what's called a character sketch, which is what a lot of authors do before they write a story, is they say, like, okay, I have this idea about this character. I want to, you know, situate him or her in New York City, and I want this kind of thing to happen, and that's going to change them. And they start fleshing out the character, and usually they ask, who is this character? What does he or she want? What's getting in the way? And what's at stake? And those kinds of questions, and there's, if you look online, there's a gazillion questions for authors in terms of exploring their character, even before they start writing their story.
You call that the backstory.
The backstory, right. So that is where I have readers start, at the beginning of their story, fleshing out their character, before they start looking at the various circumstances or events that they're dealing with. Because obviously, it's kind of like, as a therapist, when people come to me, they want to talk about what's going on, and they want, you know, instant solutions. But first, as a therapist, I want to get to know, who are you?
Right. And what I like in the book is you help the writers flesh it out of themselves.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And that's really what's helpful, because I don't think of myself as a really good writer. I think of myself as the ability to speak, not write. When I looked at this and I said, write about myself, I can speak about myself, but I don't know about writing. I wouldn't know where to start. It would just feel too overwhelming and monumental. But then you break it down in ways that, oh yeah, I can look at that, and oh, I can ask myself that question, and I can see how to build this character arc about myself that I didn't think I'd be able to. So it's an opportunity that I'm excited about. I want to do this. I haven't had a chance. I just read the book, and I haven't had a chance to really do the work. Right. But I think it would be really helpful for me to start mapping myself out in the way that you show we're able to do that.
That's great. And then you bring up the idea of not knowing where to start. And that's why I think a lot of people feel that way. Like, even if they're eager and open to exploring their story, it's like, where do I start? And so what I do is I present a particular architecture, like a very specific structure for exploring your story. And it's not something that you haven't heard of before. It's actually, if you attended English classes from grammar school through high school, you probably remember the elements of the story. It starts off, it kind of looks like a curve on the chalkboard, or I guess they're not, they're using chalkboards these days, I mean, on your smart board, where you're starting off, you know, there's the exposition, and then there's some sort of crisis, curve moving upward, if there's action, there's a conflict between the protagonist who wants to accomplish something and the antagonist that's sort of getting in the way. And the friction between the two of them creates the momentum of the story that reaches a climax. And then at the climax, there's an effort to reach for some kind of resolution. And then eventually, once the climax happens, then the action starts, things start to decompress until they reach the final resolution. So I have you isolate a chapter of your life, and actually the current chapter of your life, because the current chapter is where the protagonist of the story, which is you, is being asked to grow. So I have you start there, and I have you isolate all of these different elements from your story and use various literary techniques that you might apply to exploring the character of a novel that you might be reading in a literature class, but instead you're using those techniques to look at your own life.
Right, and there are so many ways that we can do it. There's an outer way and an inner way. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So I talk about the outer story and the inner story. And the outer story is like basically, if something happened to you, it would be how you would describe the factual series of events. So it's like the newscaster version. Yesterday, I went to work and found out that I had lost my job. And then I went home and watched 5 hours of television and didn't talk to anybody. And then I went outside and went for a run. I'm just using a circumstance because I've worked with a lot of people who've lost their jobs. So that would be the outer story. It's what happened to you. Then the inner story is how you experienced it, what your subjective emotional experience of it was.
Some people are very defeatist and some people are more hopeful.
Right, so you're just like, this always happens to me, or you experience fear or sadness, some of which would be very understandable considering that you just lost your job. But then afterwards, it's like, what stories are you telling yourself about what that means. But their inner story could be, it means life just sucks. And these things always happen to me, and therefore I'm just a victim. That kind of energy, because how you tell your story affects how you feel about your story, which affects how it unfolds. So that kind of story is going to make you feel really bad. And it will influence your motivation to find another job.
It'll take away your self-empowerment.
And take away your self-empowerment. So if you can look at your inner story, if you can reframe your inner story, which a lot of my writing exercises do, as a personal growth opportunity, or what I describe reading your story as a personal growth adventure, then you can look at the same situation of losing your job as an opportunity. Even though I have no control over what's going to happen next in terms of, like, I don't know what's actually going to be, I can use this as an opportunity to become more disciplined, or maybe to overcome my tendency to get easily discouraged and find ways to inspire myself, maybe find people to support me. Maybe I have a hard time asking for help, and I'm going to look for people who can genuinely support me in doing what I have to do for myself. Or maybe this is an opportunity. Maybe I didn't like that job, and this is like an opportunity to kind of get clarity about what I really want to be doing. If you've ever noticed, the same thing can happen to two people, and one person can respond to it very differently. If your inner story can be a response of, like, how am I going to use this as an opportunity to grow in some way?
And you call it in the book the growing edge.
Right. You retain some power over how your story transforms. And it's not just power about being able to control exactly what happens. Your inner story influences the outer story. And so you can keep responding to situations as they arise with a much more constructive attitude.
Right. It's reframing it in a more positive way.
Right.
So that we can create hope and potential opportunities. Our egos might have been self-destructive and not letting us see anything but doom and gloom. But here we can write about ourselves as a third person, inventing a story about ourselves that our ego wouldn't agree with. But our creative minds go, oh, that's interesting. What if we invented this instead of having to do that?
Right. I do think your point about the ego is really true. That's one of the reasons why, and people don't realize it until they actually do it, but that third person really liberates a lot of my... I've done this in workshops before. It really liberates people to write about themselves with a little bit more freedom than they normally would if they were writing about themselves in the first person.
Because we get a chance to invent about somebody else.
Right.
And if we had to invent about ourselves, we might just say, oh, that's I know better, right. And I couldn't do that.
Right. And we can say, like, we can be really curious, too. Like, I wonder what's going to happen next. And that gets you in a space of being open to, again, like you said it very well, the creative opportunity to co-author your story.
And so then you also ask us in writing about ourselves to define what our strengths are, as well as what our vulnerabilities are. So we can look at both sides of it and choose.
Absolutely. If you look at my book as a hamburger, kind of the meat, or I'm a vegetarian, so a veggie burger, the meat is in the middle. Because in every story, there's like necessary friction, right? Like I often describe my book as a character development workout for people who like to write. So oftentimes, I like to talk about, like, in every story, there's always an antagonist. And this antagonist, we tend to look at the antagonist as sort of the villain or an enemy, but that's not necessarily true. From a literary perspective, the antagonist is whatever person or situation or force of nature, or perhaps something inside yourself that upsets the status quo and challenges you to stretch beyond your perceived limitations. So I often liken the antagonist of your story to a personal trainer who pushes you to develop your underutilized, flabby, emotional, spiritual, or mental muscles, which we all have, right? I think Brené Brown especially has done a great job of helping people accept the fact that we all have vulnerabilities. And so what happens when their antagonist appears in our story is that it exposes us. You can look at also the wounds that haven't quite healed, the areas that still need strengthening in ourselves. And it's like an opportunity to work and really refine those emotional muscles. You know, I think in general in life, people often prefer the low impact routine, right? But, I don't want to have to do all this stuff. This I don't want life to be so hard.
But then we don't reach deeper.
Exactly. We don't reach deeper. And the truth is that more that we can kind of strengthen these muscles, the more that we can hold. And the more that we, you know, the more emotional heavy lifting that we can do, and the more emotional heavy lifting that we do, the freer we are from our internal strife. And the freer we are that we are from internal strife, really the more that we can share our gift with others. So it's not just about who we, our own, this is not about navel gazing. It's not just about, it's really about enabling us to share and to give more of ourselves. One of the things I talk about, just getting back to your original question, is one of the ways I have people work with these vulnerabilities and strengths, because, right, so every challenge requires you to use your strengths and in a particular way to get through them, but also to strengthen your vulnerabilities. One of the techniques I use is dialogues, right? So I have people engage in dialogues. I identify who's the antagonist of the current chapter of your story. And again, it could be a loved one who's just pushing you to stretch and grow in a particular way. It doesn't have to be someone that you don't like. And it could be something even benevolent like retirement. For people who are entering retirement, it can be a challenge to just let go and not be defined by your job title.
At first, I was thinking from in my own life that yep. I couldn't identify enough antagonists. Mm. And then with the help of your book, I started to find a lot of them.
Well, again, it's not an enemy. And I'm not defining it as an enemy. And I mean, sometimes it is defined that way. But I'm defining it much more loosely.
It's more of a challenge.
It's such a challenge. And so once you've identified that antagonist, then I have you isolate, kind of like if you were going to working with a personal trainer, I have you isolate the muscles that you want to work on and then dialogue with them. That's sort of the workout. Let's say you want to work on fear. So I have you do a dialogue with fear, and by personifying fear, and I can read you, actually, maybe it would be helpful to read a fear.
And speaking with it and say, what do you want of me?
What do you want from me? I offer my readers guiding questions, but I also offer them an opportunity to dialogue with those growing edges, the corresponding, like if you're very fearful, maybe you want more courage. So I offer a number of guiding questions and an opportunity to dialogue with courage to say, how can I have more of you? And actually, if it's okay with you, I could read a short courage dialogue because that's the easiest way to illustrate what I'm talking about.
Good.
So the protagonist says, courage, how can I access more of you? Courage says, first, know that I'm inside you, have always been there since you took your first little baby steps. The protagonist says, but why do I have trouble finding you? Courage says, fear made you think that I had gone away, but I lay nestled like a lion under your security blanket, waiting for you to pull the covers off and exclaim, let's go, it's time to take a stroll through the jungle. Protagonist says, ha ha, you have a great sense of humor, courage. Wish I could find that humor when I'm in my fearful place. Life seems so serious then, like every choice I make has monstrous consequences. Then courage says, the monster is not the consequence, the monster is the fear. The protagonist says, yes, but it feels so big. And the courage says back, so shrink fear down and put it in its proper place. If you can be slightly more courageous than you are afraid, you'll be in good shape. Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
It's not saying don't be afraid, but let's put courage in the front seat.
Right, and we all have these, like, the idea is that we all have like so many voices inside of ourselves. And when we use these different techniques, it access sort of the higher, you might call it the higher self, what Buddhists might call observing mind. So these are just tools and techniques to help us access the parts of ourselves that might be buried beneath our fear, for example.
And writing might be one way of drawing this courage out.
Mm-hmm.
But what about using our supporting crew? Yeah. What if we can let other friends and family encourage us and remind us how wonderful we are?
Absolutely. I have a whole chapter dedicated to that. And I talk actually about how after my father died, I was the executor of the estate. And there were a lot of responsibilities that I had that I had never had any experience with. And I was really overwhelmed. And I'm not married and I don't have any children. You know, as an orphan, I was sort of on my own, so to speak, or so I thought, to try and handle all of these things. And so one night I was up late trying to figure out how am I going to take care of all this stuff. And I realized that the protagonist has given a cast of supporting characters and the tools that they need and the resources to deal with the challenges that they face. For example, if you like Lord of the Rings, you know, Frodo's given the cloak that makes him invisible and the special garments. Luke Skywalker has his lightsaber. We don't always take inventory to look at what we have around us that can support us in moving through these obstacles. So what I do is I have readers identify like all the tools and resources at their disposal, and also like their supporting characters, who in their stories, you know, provides love and support and assistance that helps them. And I'm also very blessed with a lot of really supporting friends and family members and loved ones who helped me get through that time. But I sort of needed to take stock and remember that, because when you're scared, you forget sometimes what's there. You don't see clearly. So my writing exercises help people really take stock and say, oh yeah, you know what, maybe I can ask, oh, that's right. You know, my dad's friend's like a realtor, so I can ask him some questions about what I'm supposed to be doing. Or for all the stress, I'm going to make sure that I go to the gym. And I'm really grateful that I have a gym membership. You know, so like really taking stock of all the things that we have at our disposal so that we're not having tunnel vision.
Yeah, this is so important to have all these tools. And so the book is full of tools to help us not only know ourselves better, but to know how to understand life better so that we can use life and not just feel so vulnerable.
Absolutely. I mean, there's many ways. It's all about, you know, using your power of interpretation. Just like there's many ways to read a story, there's many ways to read your life. And so my book is about giving you some tools and strategies so that you can become good interpreters of the things that show up in your plot line.
Yeah, I'm very excited about doing this. You know, it's taking stock.
Yeah.
But it's taking stock on so many different levels of who we are, mm-hmm. what we're here for, what we expect of ourselves, what we expect or not expect of life, mm-hmm. and how we want to unfold it as fictional.
Right. How, and people, you know, one thing I wanted to say is that people often say, well, you can't control everything that happens. You know, sometimes, like, I have a climax chapter in my book where I ask people to sort of envision the ideal climax, because every conflict builds to a climax. And a lot of times, for example, people are, you know, anticipate like what's going to happen when I get married.
What's it really building to?
What's it yeah. building to? But there's no way, you know, the truth is like, and this was the hardest section for me to figure out the writing exercises for, because I thought, well, we can't always predict what's going to happen. And even if might envision what's ideal, so many things are beyond our control. And then I realized that like, if you're focusing on the internal story, then it's really about figuring out how you want, I have an exercise called giving yourself the blessing that you want from your antagonist. So actually, can I just read a section very quickly? It's just a paragraph. It just describes it better. Since I'm a writer anyway, more than a speaker, I think it would just be easier if I just read this. Even if you can't predict the climax of your story, feeling ready to step up to the challenges presented by the narrative conflict is often half, if not the entire battle. After all, before you can conquer your antagonist, you need to conquer whatever vulnerabilities, including fears, doubts, resentments, or misgivings, are preventing you from progressing to the next chapter of your narrative. Some internal struggle typically precedes the resolution of any conflict. What if you felt so mentally, physically, and emotionally ready to face the challenges ahead that your sense of confidence and empowerment was success enough so that you wouldn't even have to win the battle? Metaphorically speaking, what if you could ask your antagonist for a blessing, knowing that you deserve one, without it mattering whether or not you received it? This would be a beautiful climax indeed. For example, I had a client who had a lot of issues with her mother. And she said she was always trying to figure out, she always thought if she just could figure out the right thing to say to her mother, she would get her mother to accept her or agree with her or understand her. And then through our work together, I helped her realize like that she may never be able to get the blessing that she wants from her mother. But it wouldn't be quite so important if she could give it to herself, because that was the most important. That was the piece that was missing. So I had her like write a blessing to herself, what she wanted to hear from her mother. And that way, it might happen that she might end up getting that blessing from her mother someday. That could happen, but she wouldn't need it so much. And perhaps if she didn't need it, so if she could give it to herself, maybe she wouldn't need it so much, and then maybe she would actually get it because she wasn't constantly asking for it.
Well, building self-worth, self-esteem is so important, and I counsel a lot of people, and I realize so much of the time, whatever the trouble is out there is only the way that they can't hold their own power of self-love and self-worth, and that colors everything.
Absolutely.
And so it's really about coming home to oneself. Really, that's what this whole work of yours is about, is helping people come home to themselves, to the safe place, and to the more solid place of who they are, what their true values are,
mm-hmm.
true character arc,
right.
inner character arc, let's say,
right.
and really believe in themselves so that they can write the story in a much more powerful way.
Absolutely. And that, and just to add to what you're saying, is that it's really important to value character development in ourselves. That sometimes so many people are attached to, like, well, the idea of, like, well, of these external trappings of what it means to be successful. You know,
it's the old ego thing again, coming back to the way that we've been criticized in life and judged and criticized ourselves. And the ego then is holding all of this story. It's really a self-destructive story that we need to unwind.
Mm-hmm.
And this writing really gives us the chance to examine it and see what better life we can make of ourselves than our ego is trying to tell us.
Absolutely. The beautiful way of saying it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here's the irony that oftentimes when we just focus on, like, developing ourselves without worrying so much about what the outcome is going to be, that it just comes.
Yeah.
So it's not about, like, when we let go, have you ever noticed, when we let go, those things that we try or we're holding on to or trying to make happen so badly, they sort of come. But it's not like the letting go process is often, again, like, sort of just being able to let go of, first of all, what is going to happen and just work on ourselves. And then it just sort of, then we've just sort of done the work, and there we therefore we can kind of receive it.
Well, I've worked with thousands of people over the years. So many of them have been at wit's end, nowhere to go, ready for ruin, and somehow things find their way. And as a matter of fact, there was a book I interviewed about not long ago called What's in the Way is the Way. So we really have to let ourselves accept and work with what we think is in the way to let it reveal itself and find our way through it. So this writing is how we can find a way through ourselves.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting because I was, I did a lot of reading in preparation for this book about how authors write stories. And that while I am a writer, my writing, I've been a journalist and a proposal writer, so I actually haven't written any fiction, although I love reading fiction. But what I learned is that so many times the authors, when they start stories, like, obviously the protagonist is the engine of the story. And so oftentimes, once the author has done a character sketch, they'll find that the sort of the character sort of has a life of their own, and they just need to let go and let the life evolve of the character.
So we have to let ourselves
evolve,
and this can help so much. Kim Schneiderman, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew with your book, Step Out of Your Story. How can people follow up?
Sure. I have a website, stepoutofyourstory.com.
Okay, wonderful.
And that has my blog and my Psychology Today blog. I also write a column for the Metro, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, and Metro newspapers. But there's also links to both Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, as well as New World Library, my publisher, where they can order the book.
Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.